Today is a special day, and it's a special year this year as it marks the 200th anniversary of Karl Marx's birth. So that great man left behind...
200 years young.
Yes, and a healthy body of work.
That has even shaped the world.
Exactly. And actually, the BBC labeled him as the number one greatest thinker of the millennium.
There you go.
Wow, the millennium.
Yeah, so
that's pretty impressive.
That's very impressive. And this year also marks the 170th anniversary of the Communist Manifesto. So Karl Marx, as a philosopher, economist, historian, let's look at the lasting legacy that he's left for the world.
Well, let's talk about the man behind the beard for a second before we talk about basically what he did, what he wrote. Marx was born on May 5th, 1818. So, 200 years young. To Heinrich Marx and Henrietta Pressburg. He was born in a town called Trier. It was part of a kingdom called Prussia in the Lower Rhine. Marx was ethnically Jewish. His father was a lawyer, and they lived relatively wealthy in the middle-class existence, with his family owning a number of vineyards, actually.
Wow,
okay?
That's impressive.
His dad, I think, had an influence on him. His dad was largely non-religious and was a man of enlightenment, interested in the ideas of philosophers like Immanuel Kant and Voltaire. All right, little is known, though, about Marx's childhood. He is three of nine children, and he became the oldest son when his brother Moritz died in 1819. Back then, I think death was pretty common, all right?
Yeah, common cold and you die.
Exactly. Young Marx was educated by his father until 1830, and then he entered high school. This is really interesting. Karl Marx was a journalist for much of his life.
Wow.
He even was the European correspondent for the New York Daily Tribune from 1852 to 1863. He also liked to, early in his life, write fiction and nonfiction, okay? But let's just quickly talk about his personal life, like who he was on a personal level. Marx was a deep lover, and he loved one lady. Her name was Jenny von Westphalm. They had seven children together, but partly owing to the poor conditions in which they lived whilst in London, only three survived till adulthood, okay? So, something interesting here, too, that I found out in my research is Jenny was part of an aristocratic family, right? She was engaged to another wealthy aristocrat, but she broke it off to get married to Mr. Marx. So he must have been a Casanova as well as many other things, okay? So add that to the list. Throughout Marx's life, you might have known he used many synonyms, often referring to himself while in Paris as Monsieur Rambolz. Whilst in London, he signed off his letters as A. Williams. He even called his daughter, Choo Choo, Emperor of China.
Wow.
So he even used synonyms for his family and friends. Guys, Marx's health throughout his life was not especially great. He had poor health, something to keep in mind. It's something that he struggled with many times in his life. Eventually, would lead to his death. I guess following the death of his wife Jenny in December 1881, Marx developed illness and only lived 15 months after his wife's death. Eventually, bronchitis killed him in London on March 14th, 1883. He was 64 years old. He died a stateless person, which means he didn't have he wasn't a citizen to any necessarily country, all right? But several of his closest friends spoke at his funeral, including, I guess, Frederick Engels, who said this on March on... he said this, excuse me, let me... On the 14th of March, at 2:45 p.m, the greatest living thinker ceased to think. He had been left alone for scarcely 2 minutes, and when we came back, we found him in his armchair, peacefully gone to sleep, but forever. And something else I wanted to read here from a historian of Marxism, Eric Hobsbawm. He said, one cannot say Marx died a failure because although he had not achieved a large following of disciples in Britain, his writings had already begun to make an impact on the leftist movements in Germany and Russia. Within 25 years of his death, the continental European Socialist parties had acknowledged Marx's influence on their politics and were gaining between 15-47% in these countries. So, I mean, it was becoming very influential in these countries, largely due to his writings.
Yes, and his writings have been translated into so many different languages and has such a profound and long-lasting influence on political parties and political systems. And look at here in China, Lai Ming, how do you interpret the legacies of Karl Marx?
Or in my opinion, well, I think a lot of listeners who listen to this show regularly would know by far that I'm a nerd. So I'm very personally interested in history and understanding how things work and how we come to this point in history where we are. Well, that is a very long explanation of how nerdy I am. So when I think of Karl Marx, the thing that strikes me the most is his findings about human society. On Wikipedia, I actually look into it. The page attributed to Karl says, his analysis of the social economy laid the basis for much of the current understanding of labor and its relation to capital. And I think that's very true. Back in his days, his works explained the internal tensions within the capitalist system, how the uneven distribution of wealth could ruin economies, aggravate class struggle, and destabilize the world. Mm-hmm. So, thanks to his analysis, and also thanks to the hard lessons that we've learned from repeated economic depressions, financial crises, and such human tragedies as unemployment, displacement, and even starvation, most developed countries now have adopted social economic policies that do not rest solely on the market forces, but also seek to redistribute wealth across society using methods such as social welfare. Now, these policies have made people's lives better and reduced social tensions. But here we are at another historical juncture. I believe we are at a very important point in history where the effect of globalization is disrupting the established wealth distribution systems designed individually in different countries, and where the breakthroughs in technology reduce the amount of human labor needed in the workforce, where some countries refuse to acknowledge the root cause of their problems, but instead blame it on trade partners. So we are facing challenges on a global scale. What we need is to rationally analyze the situation, identify the root of these challenges, and work together to tackle them. And by digging into the root of problems of his time, Karl Marx showed that he cared about the working class and he cared about people. And today, in the face of our problems caused by globalization and technical innovation, we need the fighter spirits from Karl Marx and really dig deeper into the problems in relation to labor and social economy. And that's how we should commemorate Karl Marx. And that's how we show we care about people in this world.
You know, I think he existed in a time in Europe where human beings were like capital, you know. They could be abused and worked to death to just for some people to make a profit.
That was true.
And one man smart enough to try to think of a way to make this not happen. And of course, his influence, even in the U.S., I think is felt in social welfare programs and whatnot. So where would we be without somebody who came to the defense of the greater a bunch of us that play a role in the cogs and machines of the economy.
Yeah.
Let's not forget our humanity. And I think that's one of the big things Karl Marx is about, is as we pursue the future, growth and GDP and a better economy and jobs, let's not forget about our brothers and sisters out there, and let's not let them, you know, fall into harm's way. Let's try to take care of one another.
They're not just simply statistics or figures.
Exactly.
On a book, on a budget.
Well said.
There are people.
And in which case, it is important to commemorate this man.
Yes, definitely. And also, what's quite interesting, as you look at the political systems that's been adopted across the globe today, it's no longer a sort of like a battle between two different systems, I feel, because it's very much one system taking some advantages.
It's a mixture of stuff.
Yeah, elements from another, and it's no longer like a zero-sum game, so to speak, it's important to integrate these different elements of political theory and make it into what they say here in China, like communism with Chinese characteristics. And yes, we'll continue to overcome the challenges in the future with these great works that's been laid before us by some great men that once lived on this planet.